Welcome to the Mint Euro Special 2016 podcast. Over the next 30 days, Ankit Prasad will take you through some of the most exciting happenings from on and off the football field.
Hello and welcome to European Nights, a show about football. Today is Monday the 4th of July and I'm Ankit Prasad. So they're out. Iceland are. There's really no point recapping how it happened. It was basically over in the first 20 minutes as Giroud and Pogba found the back of the net. Then Payet and Griezmann scored a pair of beauties to send a chill down Germany's spine and send their team into the break in the most commanding position of any of the matches so far. But Iceland did not cave. They re-emerged resolved to not be embarrassed after getting this far and got two goals back in the second half, while France could only score one via Giroud once more. 5-2 was a far more respectable scoreline than 4-0 had been, and just about everyone in the stadium was okay with that, really. It had been a giant killing run, there's no doubts there. There was, though, a sense of anticipation after three nights of stirring football that the Stade de France would also oblige, but sadly, England bottled it. Iceland's exploits at these European Championships will be long remembered. A tenth of the combined population of their country was in France to support their team, and their team was not bad at all. The likes of Kolbeinn Sigþórsson, Aron Gunnarsson, and the one with the flowing locks who was like Thor in the middle of the park were giants for their side, and the fans too brought something a little new and likeable into this sport, which is normally often a ceremonial history repeats itself kind of affair. Iceland always sounded odds on like they'd get thrashed. We ourselves predicted them losing by 3 goals each to Portugal, England and France. One turned out right in the end. But by and large, we were wrong about them, and for once, that's a good thing. And then there were four, and what a fab four they were. If last night's matchup told us that at this stage mismatches can turn fatal, then the semi-final lineup should just about soothe anyone's apprehensions. If there had been any other combination of the remaining four teams, it may have been a bit of a stretch for Portugal and Wales, but the way things are, all four sides will have an equally good chance of winning the whole thing. We'll be previewing the matches more closely on the match days, but to just profile the teams a little bit, the first semi-final is quite simply the battle to be the best player in Europe. Ronaldo has held that title almost undisputedly since 2007 when he finished runner-up to Kaká in the Ballon d'Or. That was his first Premier League winning season with Manchester United, and it's fair to say that he's not looked back since. He gets a lot of flack from all corners, and perhaps will never be appreciated fully because of Messi, but what simply cannot be disputed is that had Real Madrid not broken the bank to buy him right after Guardiola's Barca had won what would become the first sextuple in footballing history, then Messi and co would have had a free reign in Spain. Ronaldo has stood tall against Barcelona since his Manchester United days and is 2 goals short of overtaking the legendary Alfredo Di Stefano to become the highest Real Madrid goalscorer against Barca. He is already their all-time leading goalscorer, a titanic force of nature and destroyer of sides, and once he has that record, there'll be little doubt that he's the greatest player in that great club's history. However, as it turns out, Ronaldo's future place in the Bernabeu is perhaps not as assured as it once was. He's 31 now, which seems crazy for anyone who remembers his early days as an 18-year-old with Maggie in his hair. He's still fit as a fiddle, probably fitter, and appears to have the footballing nose and drive to keep it going for a long time yet. But his winger-destroyer style of play has also inspired a few others, one of whom possesses a lot of similar attributes, though with subtle variations. Gareth Bale burst through at Tottenham under Harry Redknapp in the 2010-2011 season. He had been bought as a teenager from Southampton, from the academy that also produced the likes of Theo Walcott and Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. They liked them quick at Southampton. His development stalled a little as he was primarily used as a left-back, which wasn't all that bad a move. He was tall and athletic and being left-back gave him more time on the ball, but once he started running with it and taking players on, there was never any doubt that he would have to move further up the pitch. What's more, with Bale, the most underrated aspect is how good a shot and cross he's got. He puts them in with whip and swerve, and also with pace. Also, by his final season at Spurs, in which he scored 26 goals in all competitions, he had mastered Ronaldo's own knuckleball style of taking free kicks, and ended up scoring the most goals from outside the box of any player in the European leagues. It was fairly clear what Florentino Perez saw in him when he broke the world transfer record to snap up Bale. £86 million was the price Madrid paid, and in terms of trophies, he can even be called their lucky charm. Bale's three seasons have yielded two Champions Leagues, the trophy Madridistas covet above all others, as should anyone else. However, it's not been completely smooth sailing. He's been injured and out of form on occasions, and there's also the small matter of Ronaldo, very much the primeval black hole in the galaxy of Galacticos at the Bernabeu, occupying his favoured left wing berth. We'll come back to this tight battle day after tomorrow before we tease too much, but it's going to be one heck of a matchup with these two colliding. The other semi-final is a true battle of Europe. For sure, Italy held a vice-like grip over Germany, but Germany had a far superior team this time around, and even though the Azzurri came close to knocking them out, few will argue whether or not the better side made it through. Germany truly do appear to be the best national side at the moment. Their players are class, and they play in this new-age German way, which has all the cut and thrust of British football as well as the technical ability of Spanish football. However, in France, they will come up against probably the most talented bunch of players in this competition. Griezmann is having the kind of career in the last 2 years that makes you want to tell Götze to get out of Bayern Munich and head to Liverpool if need be. Payet is more dynamic than Ozil at the moment, and Pogba, Matuidi and Kante in midfield, or some combination of them, will give Kroos and Schweinsteiger in Khedira's absence lots of problems. Olivier Giroud looks as good a striker as he does in general, and if Mario Gomez starts, he'd like to also try his hand at that. In defence, while a lot of people will say France have a soft centre, anyone who saw Jerome Boateng give away the penalty against Italy will argue that Germany too aren't as assured as they think themselves to be. France also have a lot of strength in depth. It's quite possible that Anthony Martial or Kingsley Coman would be starters for Germany, what with their coach trying all manner of things to not feel the absence of Marco Reus, and Patrice Evra has beaten Philipp Lahm by outlasting him, if not by emulating the German World Cup winning captain's transition into midfield. France are like a newly assembled club side in a way. Their players don't have a recognisable style yet, but there's a width and depth of the selection that any nation would be envious of. It's all about how they gel versus the machine of world football. We'll preview it in closer detail on Thursday. And with that, it's time for us to wind up today. 48 matches have been played and over 100 goals have been scored. We await now two magnificent European nights in the semi-finals. It's squeaky bum time.